Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos is Pehei. We're on Pei Dalet Amud Beis. We're halfway down on the Amud, and a day dedicated to debt collection. We're going to be regaled with stories today, but in other words, it's not a gadita. In other words, it's stories, but not a gadita. The Gemara over here is going to go over numerous case study after case study regarding debt collection. Let's set ourselves up well for today. So what do we know? So we know that when you're the owner of a debt, otherwise known as a creditor. So you're entitled to get paid back. Good. Can start off nice and easy today. And then, because after this point in time, it gets a little bit more challenging. Okay, good. So you're entitled to get paid back. And so, especially if you're holding a note, so that gives you a really good legal position. So now you are a balchov and you have a shtar. So that really entitles you to get paid back. However, so a big part of a discussion started with the mission that we saw yesterday. And that is that what happens when your borrower dies? And now, so the estate goes to the next generation. So is there a way for you to get in there and get your assets? So the answer, of course, is yes. Meaning, right, again, I'm just reducing everything now to its most basic, and that, of course, is yes. In other words, you didn't lose your obligation just because the money now went from the father to the sons. You're still owed the money. However, in order for you to collect now, it's going to be a little bit more challenging because the only way now that you can collect, even though you're holding a note, the only way you can collect now from the next generation, from the Yorshim, is only in the event that you make a shvuah. Okay, so now, not only do you have to now show your shtar, but you also have to make a shvuah as well, so it does get a little bit more complicated. Now, the discussion that we've had in the Mishnah between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon is the following. So let's say that we're in the middle of the Yerusha. So the father died and now the possessions went to the next generation. However, there were holdings, there were assets that were not currently being held by the Yorshim. Where were they right now? They were somewhere else. Let's say they were in Rishus HaRabim. Okay, so can you do a tfisa? Can you go ahead? Can you grab those assets and that will be an easier recovery because now you'll be able to collect your debt and you won't have to make a shvuah. So can you do that? So Rabbi Tarfon said yes. And the only thing Rabbi Tarfon was dunning on is that who's going to be there first in line? Rabbi Tarfon says give it to the koshel. Right, that was a lashon in the Mishnah. Who's the koshel? Good, we weren't clear who the koshel is. Machlokas Tanai, Machlokas Amarim, exactly who the koshel is. But anyway, let's just keep everything nice and simple right now. So in other words, according to Rabbi Tarfon, for those assets that are not currently held by the Yorshim, so that you can go ahead and you can help yourself too, you can be toe-face. And Rabbi Kiva said, no way. Rabbi Kiva says, it doesn't matter. Any assets that are part of the estate, so they are going to go to the Yorshim, even if they're not currently held by the Yorshim, even though they're right now currently in the Rishus HaRabim, you have no right to be Tofis. That's a machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. How do the Amoraim feel on this issue? We saw yesterday, Reish Lakish, Rav Nachman, so they were fully on board with Team Rabbi Akiva. They were of the position that a Balchov cannot do any kind of collections until the assets first go to the Yorshim. And then you have to go through the standard process of collecting from the Yorshim. You'll take him to Beis Din, you'll make a Shvuah. Okay, that's Shitas Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Tarfon, on the other hand, said no. Rabbi Tarfon says that you have right and access to go ahead and to be Tofes. So again, the Amoraim of Reish Lakish and Rav Nachman did not subscribe to the Shita of Rabbi Tarfon. Good. But Rabbi Tarfon says you could be Tofes as long as it's not in the possession of the Yorshim. Now, what does that mean? It's not in the possession of the Yorshim. So on that, we had a machlokas Amoraim. So Rav and Shmuel are of the opinion that it has to be in the Rishus HaRabim. The other Amoraim says that it could even be in a simta, off to the side. Okay, anyway, good. So that's where we are right now. So in the middle of this debate between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon, machlokas Amoraim, which town we follow like? And that's where we're in the middle of discussing. Okay, so what are we going to see today? It's going to be one story after another. Story number one. Kreva de Rav Yochanan. So we are on Pei Dalet Amud Beis, and we're halfway down in the Amud. So we start off with a story with relatives of Rav Yochanan. Not the first time in this Masechta that we are talking about relatives of Rav Yochanan. And if you remember, earlier in the Masechta, so they got advisement from Mishpacha, meaning Rav Yochanan, who was a Gaon Atzum, he was the leader of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. So he advised them in terms of what to do. So Kreva de Rabbi Yochanan Tafas Paradias me Simta. So what happened was is that they were indebted. They were the creditors. And one of the cows was right now we're in the middle of Yerusha. Right? The father died, the father who was the borrower died, and the cow of the father now it was in the middle of being yarshin now to his sons. However, it was currently right now in a simta. It was not on the property. It was off property. And so can they collect that cow? So they did. And not only did they collect it, they collected it from simta, meaning it was not in the Rishus HaRabim proper. It was off to the side. Also coming to Rabbi Yochanan. So they go to Rabbi Yochanan for a little bit of advisement. Amalu Shaper Tefasua. And Rabbi Yochanan gave him a big thumbs up. Good. You did good. Okay. Yeah, right. You had the right to be toe-faced, and Rabbi Yochanan totally okayed it. He approved it. So Amalu Shaper Tefasua. So also coming to Rabbi Shimon Malakish. So now they go to Reish Lakish. So in their first questioning with Rav Yochanan, so they weren't asking him as a shayla, they were asking him as a relative. Now, what do you think? And so he told them what he thought. Now they went to Reish Lakish and Amalahu Zila Adur. So they went to Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says nothing doing. You're going to take that cow and you're going to return it back to the Yorshim. Again, it doesn't mean that he's canceling the debt. It just simply means that what Reish Lakish is doing is he's paskin like Rabbi Akiva of our Mishnah, that the entire Yerusha is going to go to the Yorshim, and then afterwards you have to now go and collect in the standard method of taking them to court and having to make a shvuah. So also coming to Rabbi Yochanan, so they go back to Rabbi Yochanan, and they said, I don't understand. We consulted with you. You said it was okay. We went to Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says we have to return it. So Amar Lahu, Ma'ase, Kenegdi Chaluk Alai. So Rav Yochanan says, okay, I'm really sorry. Kenegdi, Reish Lakish is equivalent to me. And so he argues with me. I can't do anything. Meaning, okay, I'm yielding to Reish Lakish, which in of itself, as we pointed out numerous times, is amazing. Meaning Reish Lakish started off at ground zero in terms of his Yiddishkeit. And Rav Yochanan was Makariv him, and Rav Yochanan took him in as a brother-in-law, and eventually Reish Lakish got to the point where he was on equal footing with Rav Yochanan. And over here, Reish Lakish is arguing with Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan clearly over here says, look, I yield. Hahu Bakra Diasmi. Okay, another story. So so there was a Bakra. So Bakra over here, basically a shepherd. And so he was watching the animals of Yisomim. So Detavse Turamine. So along comes the Baal Chov and takes one of the cows, in this case the bull. So anyway, so Baal Chov Amar Mechaim Tafsinale. Ubakra Amar Lacher Misa Tafse. And so now, he did a Tfisa. So it's critical to know when the Tfisa was done. Was it done when the father was alive? The father over here being the borrower. So if the Tfisa was done while the borrower was alive, so that Tfisa is recognized and valid. In other words, the debt was due, and there was a reluctance to pay, and the Baal Chov had a note. So the Baal Chov came and he was toe-faced. He has the right to do so after the debt was owed. And now, as far as the estate is concerned, so the estate is arguing and the shepherd is agreeing with them that Tfisa was done after the father died, which again now means that according to Rabbi Akiva, so that Baal Chov doesn't have a right to be toe-faced. And again, it means that it belongs to the Yorshim. And yes, now the Baal Chov still has a note and he still owed the money. But again, he's got to go to court and have him make a shvuah. And he has to make a shvuah. Okay. Anyway, also coming to Rav Nachman. So Amalei, Ilach, Islach, Sahari, Detavse. Islach, Sahari, Detavse. Yeah, no, I'm good. Islach, Sahari, Detavse. So Rav Nachman says, okay, let's get some more details over here. Are there witnesses that you were toe-faced? So Amar Lei, so the shepherd said, love. He says, no. Now I have no witnesses that he was toe-faced. Meaning, we know the facts. The facts are that the Baal Chov was toe-faced, but the shepherd cannot provide witnesses in terms of when it happened. So Amar Lei, Migo di Yachol Amem, Alakuchu Biyadi, Yachol Nam Alamem, Mechaim Tafsin Alei. So Rav Nachman says, okay. So basically now Rav Nachman says, I'm going to award it to the Baal Chov. Meaning because he was owed the money and he did a tfisa, and you can't validate through witnesses when the tfisa was done, and currently he's holding it right now. Okay, it belongs to him. Good. So the Hamar Reish Lakish Hagojros Ein Lem Chazaka. So Reish Lakish says that when it comes to small little animals, so Ein Lem Chazaka, meaning just because you're holding it does not qualify as a chazaka. Small little animals are jumping around all the time from one place to another. And just because you're holding it does not recognize legally as a chazaka. So the Gemara says, Shani Tura, the Mesira Laroa. So the Gemara says, okay, but we're going to make a very easy distinction between large animals and small animals. Small animals are jumping from place to place, and you holding them is not established a chazaka. But over here, when it comes to a large animals like a bull are large and pretty stationary. And if you're holding them, so that gives you the legal grounds of what's called the chazaka. Okay, next story. Okay, so family members of the Beis Nasi. So in Eretz Yisrael, so you had a leadership. The leadership was a Nasi. The leader was a Nasi. And family members of the Nasi were Beis Nasi. Okay, so in other words, they're really prestigious people in the community. And so they were owed money. And so they took assets. And here, the asset they took, Amasa. They took a maidservant. Okay, slave. So, and they took it from the Yisomim. Now, they took it from the Sitma. So, Simta. So, again, let's review. So, we're talking over here where the Baal Chov was owed money. And as far as the borrower is concerned, so he was defaulting. He never paid back. And now he could have taken any assets while the borrower was alive. He didn't. And now after the borrower died, so the Amta was not currently on the premises, on the property. Now it's funny, halachically, what is a slave in terms of assets? Is it metaltalin or is it karka? Good. And that is a confusing question because sometimes in the daf, you're going to hear me say that a slave is karka. Sometimes you're going to hear me call it metaltalin. Okay, it's a little bit of a hybrid. Okay, but anyway, but the Baal Chov over here, so he did a tfisa on the Amta. So he took the slave. In this case, it was a woman. So he took it from Simta. So, and again, what does that mean? It means that she was not currently in the Rishus HaRabim. She was off to the side of the Rishus HaRabim. So Yosef Chanina Bar, I'm sorry, Yosef Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi, Rabbi Yitzhak Nafcha, Yosef Rabbi Abba Gabayu. So you had all these Amorayim, and Amar Lahu, so the Shaper Tafsi Suha, so the, not a question, statement. So one of the Dayanim said, good, he did good. In other words, that was a good Tfisa. So Amar Lahu Rabbi Abba, so Rabbi Abba said to the Dayanim, Mishum de Benisian, and who? He says, whoa, slow down. I don't think you're giving a clear ruling over here. Your judgment is being a little bit impaired. Why? Because this is somebody who's coming from the Beis Nasi. So they have a very strong political position and they have political leverage. And right now it's clouding your judgment. So, So I'm going to remind you what we learned in yesterday's daf, which is, that there was a Baal Chov who did a tfisa, and Reish Lakish says, come back. And right, you're going to bring that right back to the estate. It belongs to the estate, meaning we passing like Rabbi Kiva. We don't passing like Rabbi Tarfon. And since we passing like Rabbi Kiva, not like Rabbi Tarfon, so no, after the father died, so you can't do a tfisa in line with the Shita of Rabbi Kiva, in line with the Shita of Reish Lakish, who subscribes to the Shita of Rabbi Kiva. So Rabbi Abba says to the judges, look, right, he accused them. He said straight to their faces, you're right now being clouded in your judgment because of who the litigant is. I'm telling you, let me give you some clarity on this issue. You can't be Toface. Okay. Yema Barchashu, that's his name. Next story. Sorry, let's pause. New story. All the same topic for today. Okay, so it's going to be one after another. Yema Barchashu, Avamaske Bezuzabahu Gavra. So Yema Barchashu was a creditor. And somebody owed him money. So the Shachiv, the man died. Vishavik Arba. And what as part of his assets, what did he have? He had a boat. So Amar Le Lishluche. So Yemar says to one of his shlichim, okay, new collection agent, go ahead, collect my debt for me. So Azul Tafsa. So he did a tfisa on the boat. So again, where are we right now? So we are on debt collection from the estate, but over here with a wrinkle. And that is that it wasn't the creditor himself who collected, but rather he sent an agent to collect it. So Pagu Bei Rapapa Rav Huna Bered de Rav Yeshua. So along comes two Amorim, Rapapa and Rav Huna. So Amrele, they say to him, no good. Atofetz Abachov, Makum Shechav L'Acherim. V'am Rav Yochan, Atofetz Abachov, Makum Shechav L'Acherim, Lo Kano. Okay, so, and as we're on the top of Pei Hei Amad Aleph. So these Amorim said, you can't do that. Meaning, what you can't do is that you can't collect a debt on behalf of somebody else. That is, Tofes Baal Chov, you're collecting for a Baal Chov, but when there are other creditors out there, so the Baal Chov himself has every right to collect as much as any of the other creditors, but only he himself. But what you can't do is that somebody else, a third party, cannot collect on his behalf, but Makom Shechav L'Acherim. Okay, now there is a major discussion over here. You can see a small tosos on Pei Dalamud Beis. There's a major discussion over here What if you establish him as your agent, as your shliach? So is he now, are we violating the rule of Rav Yochanan? Meaning, otherwise stated, a collection agency. So if he's now serving as your agent, so can he collect on your behalf? So there is a major debate between Rashi and Tosfos on this very issue, and I know it's very halacha lemaisa, right? People use collection agencies all the time, right? The medical profession uses collection agencies. So it's a touchy issue. But meanwhile, I'm gonna steer away from that issue. In other words, just simply because we have a lot of daf that we have to cover today. I'm highlighting. It is a discussion amongst the Rishonim. But meanwhile, over here, so they told the, I'm going to call him a shliach, by the way, recognizing the fact that it's up for debate whether or not he is an actual shliach or he's just stam, a person collecting on behalf of others. Anyway, but these Amoraim told the shliach, no, you can't do that. You can't collect for the creditor when other creditors are out there. Oh, by the way, and this is an important aside, it happens to be that these Amoraim happen to be other creditors as well. Okay, that's not an unimportant detail. It's a pretty important detail. And that brings us now to the second part of our story. So, Tafsua Inhu. Now, they do a Tfisa, meaning so these Amoraim also happen to be creditors as well. Okay, Rachmanis, the person died with a lot of creditors. So anyway, so they do a Tfisa. Okay, so now part two of the story. Same story, part two. And now they do a Tfisa on the boat, and now they dispensed with the third party. You can't collect on behalf of that other creditor. And so now they are both entitled to that boat, but each one of them now wants to take the boat. And now these Amoraim themselves are going to be fighting over who is actually the rightful owner of this boat. And why are they fighting? Because each one of them did a kinyan on the boat, and each one of them did a separate kinyan on the boat. Rav Papa Mimlach Meluche, so Rav Papa himself, so what did he do? So he got on the boat, and he rowed the boat. And rowing the boat, so what does that show you? It's a proprietary act. And a proprietary act is a means of acquisition. Now I say that, by the way, knowing that's true, but when that's true when it comes to karka. Right? What is a boat? Is a boat karka or is it metalkaline? It sounds like a boat's metalkaline. Okay, so it is not the best form of a kinyan, but that's what he did. He rowed the boat. Okay, on Yom Kippur, you're going to hear this word malach, right? Malach over here, mem lamed ches. So malach in Sefer Yonah is a sailor, a captain. So over here, he captained the ship, Rav Papa. But it just simply means he took out oars and he rowed the boat. And Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua, mematach lebashla. And what did Rav Huna do? So he towed the boat. So he pulled the boat with ropes. Okay, so he had another boat, and he tied it to this boat, and he pulled it with ropes, otherwise known as Meshicha. So now, of the two methods of Kinyan, and which one is the better method of Kinyan? What a great question. So Amar Ani Kanila Lakula. Well, each one of them is claiming that they did the best acquisition on that boat. The question over here presented is, who did it first? And I don't know. In other words, it sounds like it's simultaneous, but I don't know. I think it's an important question, and the Gemara doesn't say. So, Paga Bahu, Rav Pinchas Barami. So now, these Amorim met with Rav Pinchas Barami. Amar Lahu Rav Ushmol, Amar Tavai, Vushit Zavur, Mamunachim, Bershos Arabim. He says, wait 1 second. He says, I'm challenging, meaning I'm not going to get involved in terms of who does a better Kenyan, the rower or the or the one pulling the ropes. I'm not getting involved over there. What I am going to get involved is that do you have a right to go ahead and to do a tfisa? Can you grab the boat as means of collecting your debt? Meaning, what do we learn? Again, machlokes between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. That's step number one. Even within the sheet of Rabbi Tarfon, a machlokes amarayim, where exactly, which assets are considered off-site, and therefore you have a right to be tofes. And we learned in yesterday's daf that according to Rav and Shmuel, it's only considered off-site if they're currently in a Rishos Arabim. So now this boat, is this boat in a Rishos Arabim? I don't think so. So in other words, even if you subscribe to Rabbi Tarfon, which again, we already know, many Amoraim, including Reish Lakish and Rav Nachman are of the position that we don't pass like Rabbi Tarfon, but even if I pass like Rabbi Tarfon, the only assets that you could be toe-face are only when they're off-site. And according to Rav and Shmuel, off-site means that they have to currently be in a Rishos Arabim. So Amr relates to Rav Papa and Rav Huna, who are both trying to acquire the boat. So they say in their defense, Ananami mecharifusa de nahara tafsina. This boat was not on any kind of deck, not tied to any deck. This boat was currently right now in the middle of the water, and therefore the middle of the water is viewed as a rishus harabim. Okay, don't get confused as I did in terms of rishus harabim, rishus yachid vis-a-vis Shabbos. We're not rishus harabim over here. We're not talking about Shabbos rishus harabim. We're talking about rishus harabim vis-a-vis kinyanim. So when you're in a public area, so that is called by kinyanim standards, that's called a rishus harabim. Once this boat is out in the water, so that from a kinyan standpoint is considered rishus harabim. So they felt that this boat was totally available for a tfisa because the boat was in a rishus harabim. Also, come into Rava. Now, this particular case now made its way all the way to Rava. So Amar Lahu Kake Chivrei, and Rava had not complimentary things to say about these Amorayim who are trying to acquire the boat. It literally translated as white geese. That's what he describes them as. Okay, so white geese, right? Was that complimentary or pejorative? In the context of our Gemara, it sounds like he was not saying it as complimentary. And when you see this expression, it comes up a couple times throughout Shas. Please don't ask me to cite Dapim. I wish I could. But anyway, it comes up a couple times throughout Shas, and it's never used as a complimentary term to describe a Talmid Chacham as white geese. But the white over here is a reference to the beard, right? When you see the beard starting to go white. In other words, it's a backhanded compliment. Anyway, he says, Mishach Kalim, Adin Shei, you're pulling clothing off of people, meaning you have no entitlement for a tefisa over here. You can't just simply acquire the boat. Rav Nachman's of the position that the only time that tefisa works is only when you were toface while the bar was alive. Once a borrower dies, all assets at that point in time belong to the Yershim. The assets that are on-site and the assets that are off-site all belong to the Yershim, i.e. the position of Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, you have no entitlement to take that boat. And so, right, you're getting involved in Rabbi Tarfon and the Machlokas Amorayim within the Shita Rabbi Tarfon. So Rava says, enough already. We paskin like Rabbi Akiva, right? Nothing to discuss. Okay, good. New story. Avimi b'reid Rabbi Abba Ava Maske b'zuzi b'chuzai. So Avimi was the one who borrowed money. Okay, you got the words you just have to read carefully. Okay, it took me a while to get like sensitivity. Havumaske bay. So others were demanding from him money. In other words, so he was a borrower. The people who he owed money to were living in Bechuzai. So Shadrinu. So fine. So there was so now Avimi was interested in doing the right thing, otherwise known as paying his debt. So he sent the money. So he sent the money with a shliach. So Shadrinu biyad chama breid rava bar abahu. So good. So now he's paying his debt, but he's and he sent the money. He sent the money with Chama b'reid de Rabba Barabu. Let's just call him Chama. And Azul u parinu. So here the shliach now is paying the debt of Avimi. And good. So what he do is so he took the money and he handed it over to the creditors. Story over, right? Nope, not over. So Amar lehu havali shtara. So Chama now says to the Bechuzai, the creditors, okay, now that I gave you the money, can you give me the note? Because that's how satisfaction of debt works. You pay the money, you take back the note, and of course, the first thing you do with the note, you tear it up. Amrule sitrayninu. So the creditor said, well, happens to be that Avimi owed us numerous debts. Some of the debts that he owed us were written down on paper. Some of the debts that he owed us were a milval peh, was an oral loan. So what you just did, thank you very much, is you satisfy the milval peh. Ah, but in other words, we're going to hold our note, thank you very much, because the note represents another loan. No. So, Asa l'kama de Rabbi Abahu. So now we go to court, and they go to Rabbi Abahu's court, and Amar lei isach zadeh de paratinu. Are the witnesses that said that you paid the loan? So Amar lei, so Avimi said, no. He says, no. No witnesses came along and ever said that I paid back the other loan. So Amar lei migu decholam lamar lo hayu dvar meolam yecholam namel amemar sitrayninu. He says, okay, that really puts you in a bad position. You are in a really, really weak spot because now that you there are no witnesses who can attest to the fact that you paid back your oral loan. So now they could just simply say we never received the money. Now that would be a fabrication, admittedly, But in other words, but because they could say that, so now they're going to be given credibility when they say that this money is going to be satisfaction for the oral loan, meaning it's called a migu. So fine. So basically, so the court ruled against Avimi. Okay, so he was stuck. So now that money that he paid served now only to satisfy the oral loan. As far as the written loan is concerned, that's still binding. Okay, now we go back to the shliach. Now what the shliach did is as follows. He was given the following instructions. Look, I'm giving you money to pay back my debt, and this is going to be for the milveh bishtar. It's for the note. And what I wanted you to do is I wanted you to pay back the loan and get back the shtar for me. And what you didn't do is that you didn't do that. You didn't do what I told you to do. So now we are going to be focusing on liability of the shliach. The Gemara wants to know, lein yishlumei shliach mai. So does the shliach have liability? So right, no good deed goes unpunished. Okay, I know that's cliche. But over here, however, it's apt. In other words, the shliach was just doing the guy a favor. And now he's going to be left holding the bag. Maybe. So Amar Avashi, so the Gemara discusses this very issue about the liability of the shliach. So Chazin and Amar Lu Shkol Shtarei V'Hav Zuzei. So Mishalim. Hav Zuzei Shkol Shtarei Lo Mishalim. So what we have to do is we have to go back to the and carefully look at the instructions that were given to him. Meaning, if the Mishaleach, in this case the borrower who sent the money, if his instructions were very clear, here's what I want you to do. Step number one is, right, you're ready to now do the exchange of paying back the debt and collecting the note. If the instructions were first take the note, then pay back the debt, so fine. So then that is going to be a failure on the part of the shliach, and now he's going to have the liability to have to pay. If, on the other hand, he was first pay back the debt and then get back the note, so then there is no liability. At least that's what Rav Ashi thinks. Velohi, and the Gemara just simply rejects this. Right? This happens in the Gemara sometimes. Sometimes the Gemara just comes up with an anonymous response. Velohi, the Gemara says no. So benkach benkach mishalim da amar le letkune shadarticha velo lavuse. So the Gemara says no. The shliach is going to have liability regardless of what those instructions were, because when you send a shliach out, so the understanding is that the shliach is there to help you, not to hurt you. And so therefore, even if you didn't say with clarity, hey, I want you to first take the note, and then you can go and pay back the loan. So even though those weren't the instructions, by virtue of the fact that the shliach didn't do that, so that's a failure on the part of the shliach, and therefore he's got liability. Okay. On every one of these stories, by the way, you can only imagine, there's a lot more to say on every one of these stories. We're just highlighting right now. But okay, and there's a Tosus that discusses that the shliach is going to be subject to liability in every scenario. Right? Okay, and Tosus discusses it back on the previous Amud. Anyway, next story. So there was a woman. And let's give a little bit of background over here. She was married. And while she was married, so her husband trusted her. And her husband said, look, here I have a whole bunch of account receivables. So I want you to do is I want you to hold the paper for me. Good. So you'll take it. You'll watch it for me. Good. And now, and now the husband died, and along comes the kids, and they say to their, now could be their mother, could be just a stama stepmother, regardless. So, but they say to her, okay, right, dad left by you a whole bunch of account receivables, right, you'll hand them over to us, give us the paper. So, thank you, they say to the widow. So, Amr Luhu, Mechaim Tafsina Luhu. And she says, oh, no, I'm not handing the paper to you. In other words, right, your father owed me money. Now, owed me money could just simply be the ksuva over here that he owed me. In other words, I'm still owed money by him. And so therefore, I qualify this as a tfisa. So I'm holding the paper right now until I get satisfied. My own obligations. So, also the comment to Rav Nachman. So they go to Rav Nachman. Amar Allah, so Rav Nachman asked the woman, So Rav Nachman asked her the following. You know when it's called the tfisa? It's called the tfisa when you grab something and then they say, give it back. Is that what happened? That's not what happened. In other words, while he was alive and while you were married, he simply asked you to watch it because he trusted you. So that's not tfisa. You're simply a shomer. You're just simply a custodian of the of that paper. So Amrale lo. So she answers, quite honestly, no, you're right. In other words, when I took the paper, nobody said give it back, because I was acting as a shomer. So Im Kain, so Rav Nachman says okay. So then Havi Tfisa Lachamiso, Tfisa Lachamiso lo klomi. So Rav Nachman says okay, you're going to hand the paper to the kids, right? In other words, because again, what do we know? So we're hearing this numerous times, so it does sink in, at least with me. And that is that Rav Nachman subscribes to Rabbi Akiva. After the death of the father, the entire estate now goes over to the kids. Again, that doesn't mean that she's going to lose her obligation. She still is owed money, but it just simply means that you can't be toface any of the assets after the death of the father. Everything gets funneled over to the Yerushim, and then you're going to have to collect from the Yerushim. So Rav Nachman ruled against her and said, look, all that paper that you're holding, you're going to give it back to the kids. Okay. Okay, new story. Okay, we're gonna get a little bit off tangent as we're going over all these stories, but okay, new story. There was a woman, and she was taken to court, and for whatever reason, a host of reasons, whatever they may be, she had to make a shvua. So Amrale Bas Rav Chista. So along comes the daughter of Rav Chista, who parenthetically, oh by the way, is the wife of Rava. Okay, and the daughter of Rav Chista, why was she not given her own name? Why was she called the daughter of Rav Chista? Well, number one, because she was the daughter of Rav Chista. But number two, probably the Gemara is also telling us that she knew a lot. In other words, through osmosis, just by being the daughter of Rav Chista, so you end up knowing a lot. So Amra Bas Rav Chista Yadana Ba Dechashuda Shvua. So she tells her husband, that woman over there, no good. She's not a trustworthy woman. Don't allow her to go into your court in order to make a shvua. I'm telling you, she's not credible. So, Avcha Rava l'shvua asher chenegda. Amazingly. So Rava said, okay, he trusted his wife. And in a moment, we're going to see that he implicitly trusted his wife. You'll understand that better in just a moment from now. So he trusted his wife and he said, okay. So now, next day in the courtroom, so he turns to her and he says, you are not credible in terms of giving a shvua. You have a history of lying under oath, right? And again, by the way, just remember, because the Gemara is going to comment on this. How did he know that? Based on the information given to him by his own wife. Okay? That's amazing. We're going to come back to that point in just a moment. And now what he did is that in the courtroom, so when you have somebody, we learned this in Masechta Shvuos, when you have somebody who has to go to court in order to make a shvua, in order not to pay, and they can't make a shvua because of their lack of credibility. So what happens in the courtroom? We flip the shvua. We go over to the counter litigant and we say, no, you now have a right to make a shvua. This is what's called kenegda. You now have the right to make a shvua. You'll make the shvua and you'll be able to now go ahead and collect money. Okay, good. And that's exactly what he did. So zimnin, avu yasvei kamei, rapapa ravada bramasna, aisu ishtar gabe. Okay, so. On another occasion, but this is part two of the same story. On another occasion, so sitting in front of Rava were none other than Rav Papa and Rav Ada. So along comes a star. So Rav Papa says, "Oh, that star, I know what's going on. That star is a funny star, meaning it's a forge, it's a counterfeit. All right, it's not a good star. It was already paid up. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll be clear. Right, that star was already paid up." It's same, but the same point. The Rav Papa is discrediting the weight of that shtar. So Amrale. So Rava says to Rav Papa, "That's interesting information. Can you have somebody come along and corroborate that information together with you? In other words, in order to discredit a shtar, what do I need? I need Edim. You, Rav Papa, serve only as one witness. So good, Mazel Tov. I need a second witness. So." So ik in the behade damar amrale lo. So Rav Papa says no, it's just me. It's just me saying it. Nobody else is saying it. So amrale afa gav di ik amar. So edech adlaf klumu. So Rav says to Rav Papa, look, right. I appreciate the information, but you're only one witness. I need a second witness. Otherwise, I have to honor the shtar. So amrale Rav Ada bar Masna lo yeh Rav Papa kibas Rav Chista. So Rav Ada bar Masna makes the point that we're all thinking, and that is, well, excuse me, wait one second, Rava, I say this respectfully, but didn't you listen to your wife regarding that woman who came into the courtroom? And didn't you discredit her based on the testimony that was given to you by your wife? And so over here, Rav Papa should be no worse than your own wife. You're not going to believe Rav Papa any more than your wife? And the answer is amazing. Rava's response, Bas, Rav Chista Kim Le Begava, Mar Lo Kim Li Begave. Yeah, I trust my wife. Rav Papa, not so much. Okay, now. Yeah. So the this is nothing short than amazing. And but Rava said it. Okay, there's much to discuss over here in terms of anyone getting any more credibility than others. Okay, so what are the takeaway points from this Gemara over here? Hard to say. Meaning, it's God forbid, Rachmanis. Let's not say that Rav Papa's credibility was in any was being challenged or questioned at all. Meaning, Rav Papa is a Gon, he's an Amora. So who's part of the Mesora. So, but clearly over here, the Gemara is outlining what Rav is saying is that in terms of receiving information about others, if it's somebody who you implicitly trust, Rava had the full confidence and trust that his wife never lied. So under those circumstances, he is totally prepared and ready to not only listen to her, but actually have her input get involved in legal matters. It's nothing short than amazing. And meanwhile, Rav Papa is somebody who, again, is not a lightweight. But when Rav Papa says something, so he didn't have that kind of implicit trust within in Rav Papa. And he said, no, I'm ready to hear you, but only if you have a second witness. Okay. Amara Papa Hashadam Amar Kimli Begavai Milsehi. So Rav Papa walks away and, right, I'm maybe feeling hurt, maybe not feeling hurt. Doesn't matter. The Rav Papa says, okay, it's a lesson learned now. And this idea now that if there's somebody that you implicitly trust, oh, that's gonna play a role in the halacha. So now Rav Papa says, Kagon Abba Mari Bari. Oh boy, this was so confusing. It took me a moment to get it to understand. Abba Mari was his name. Bari, it's my son. Okay, his son's name was Abba. Okay, my first rabbi and from YU, that was his name. So people went by the name of Abba. So Abba Mari, my son. So the Kimli Begave Karan Ishtar Rapume. So Rav Papa says, now I know that if my son gives me any information about somebody and I implicitly trust my son, right, I know that he never lies. So under those circumstances, so if he says something about a star, I'll tear the star up. Now the Gemara immediately wants to just check that statement. Karana Sakadaita, you're going to tear up a star? That's really serious. So the Gemara says, no, Ela Marana Shtarei Pume. No, I'm not going to tear up a star. Meaning that's taking it too far. But what I will do, however, is that I will discredit a star. If my son tells me that that's a funny star and it's not, and don't use that star for collection, that's not a good vehicle, so I'll believe him. Okay. Hi Isasa. Pei Hei Amud Aleph. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. There's a period in my Gemara over here. Okay, it's like four lines before the lines start getting wide. Hi Isasa di Chai Vishua Beidina de Rav Bibi Barbaye. So a woman was obligated to give a Shua in the court of Rabibi Bar Abaye. Amalu Ahu Baldin, Tesevi Tishava Bamasa. So her counter litigant said, In other words, don't make her make a shvua in her court. She's too comfortable over there. Okay, this is a businesswoman. She's too comfortable over there in her court. So what you'll do is you'll have her come to my court and let her make a shvua over here where she's less comfortable. So Efsha Demichsefe Umodya. Because over here, in this court over here, she may have a little bit more shame. She may admit that she owes the money. So Amra Luhu. So the woman says, fine, I'll come to your court. I'll make a shvua in your court. What I want you to do, prepare the paperwork. I want you to write the, I'm going to make a shvua. I want you to prepare the paperwork. So, and the paperwork is going to basically say, I came into the court and I testified under oath that I owe the money. And so now I can go back and I can collect using the paperwork. So you'll write up the paperwork beforehand. So acceptable or unacceptable. Okay, good. So that's what we're going to be discussing in the next number of lines of Gemara. So Amr Lehu Kisvali Zachvasa. So I want you to write it up. So Dechim Ishtabani Yavali. And that way I can make the Shvua and I can just make my exit strategy right out of the courtroom. Amr Lehu Rabbi Bar Abaye Kisvula. So Rabbi Bar Abaye says, fine, Okay, look. And anyway, look, she's being, obviously she's being very compliant, meaning we're telling her to leave her own courtroom and to come to our courtroom. Rabibi Barabai says, good, let's do it. Let's write up the paperwork first. And so here we now get to another topic for today, and that is, are you allowed to do that? Can you pre-write the paperwork, knowing that the action hasn't happened yet, but basically in order to help accelerate and expedite the whole process? So Amra Papi Mishim Dasi Samimulai Amrisu Mili Mulyasa. So Rav Papi has a very sharp comment to say about Bibi Barabaye, and he says, look, he comes from a short family. He says things that are short-sighted. Okay, now what does that mean, he comes from a short family? So Bibi Barabaye was the son of Abaye. So we know that Barabaye comes from Mishpacha Seili. And we know that Rav and Abaye both come from Mishpacha Seili. And so therefore, anyone who comes from that family is not going to be blessed with longevity. Okay, that's just simply it comes with the territory. Abaye lived to the age of 40. Rav lived to the age of 60. The Gemara elsewhere goes over exactly how they made it that long, meaning that coming from the family of Eli, that's long living in the family of Eli. So Bibi Bar Abaye was obviously from that family. In other words, he is the son of Abaye. And so Rav Papi says he comes from Abaye's family. They don't live long lives, and he's saying something which is short-sighted. Okay, and yes, that registers as a really sharp comment. And again, that's how they spoke. Okay? So the Afilu Rabbanan lo pligi. Sorry, I skipped a little bit. So the Ha Marava Ha Ashrasa de Dayana de Mechtave Mikama de Navis of Sahade Achasimus Yadayu Psula. So let's say you write up an Ashrata. An Ashrata we discussed extensively back in the second parak of Ksuvos, and that's basically notarization of a document, right? In order for a document to be collected, it needs to be notarized. So, and the notary process is discussed back in the second parak. So over here, can you write up the notary comment on the document prior to the actual testimony of the signatures? No, you may not. In fact, if you write it up prior to the testimony, no good. It's puzzle. So Amma Mechzei Keshikra Hakanami Mechzei Keshikra. You can't write up paperwork before they testified. In our case over here, before she made the shvua. You can only write up the paperwork after it happens. Velesa Midrav Nachman. The Gemara notes that we don't agree with that. Meaning, you are allowed to write up paperwork. Midrav Nachman, Amar Rav Nachman, Omer Hayarebi Meira, Afilo Matzah Ba'Ashba, V'Chasmo, Nasnu La Kasher. Statement made by Rav Nachman. He said that, and Rav Nachman says in the name of Rav Meir, is that let's say the get was already written up. And it happens to be that we found it in the garbage. I know that's a funny place to find the get. What's the get doing in the garbage? It doesn't matter. Anyway, the get was written up. And so as long as you pluck it out of the garbage and you have witnesses signing it and you give it to the woman, kosher, such a get would be kosher. Now that is controversial, but that's only controversial within the world of gittin. Because whether or not the get has to be written lishma, so as we get to Masechta Gittin, but that's much later on. So when we get to Masechta Gittin, so it's a major controversy as to whether or not the get has to be written lishma. So, but that's only by get. So avav b'shar shtaris, but when it comes to all other shtaris, mo delay. Meaning, what didn't bother him is the fact that it was pre-written. It simply that didn't bother him. Da'amrav Asi, Amrav Yochanan Shtar Shalavabo Uparo and Echozivalavabo. Shikvar nimcha shibudo. What you can't do is you can't recycle a shtar. Meaning, let's say, for example, that we wrote up a note and I paid it up and now the shtar was given back to me. Okay, can I basically recycle the same note? Yes or no? So the answer is no, you can't recycle a note. Why? Because once the note was used, the shibud is gone. Right? The note is a collecting vehicle. But once it's used, the vehicle, I don't know if you like the analogy, but the vehicle ran out of gas. Okay? And even though the car's there, but you can't reuse it. Good. That's what's called machal shibudo. So aval amechze kishikra lo cheshinan. Okay, that's the only issue. But in other words, the fact that's pre-written, that's not an issue. So basically, we have a lot of back and forth in the Gemara in terms of whether or not you could pre-write the paperwork, yes or no. So the Amoraim are debating this very issue. Rav Papi thought that was nonsensical, Rav Papi thought that you can't say that. You can't pre-write up any documents. And a number of Amoraim on the other side of this issue says, yeah, sure you can. In other words, if you know the event is going to happen, you can write up the paperwork ahead of time. Next. Pehei Amud Beis. Top of the Amud. How will Gavra Divke Shav Marganisa? Sorry, Besidna. Bei Rav Mesha Berei de Reb Yoshua Ben Levi. So there was a person. And he deposited 7 precious stones. And he deposited and he put it in a specific sack. And he held, and Rav Mesha held it for him. Rav Mesha, who happened to be the son of Rav Yeshua ben Levi, not so long ago, in the daf, we talked about how special Rav Yeshua ben Levi was. Okay, good. So the shach of Rav Mesha v'lo pocket. Now Rav Mesha dies, and Rav Mesha does not give any instructions. So over here, as part of the estate, he's got these 7 precious stones, and no clear instructions of who they belong to, what to do with them. Also, look, coming to Rabbi Ami, so they go to Rabbi Ami. Amarlo, chad diadana be Rabbi Mesha bar bereid Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi delo amid. Okay, so let's go over 2 points as they went to the courtroom, and this was the courtroom of Rabbi Ami. And Rabbi Ami says, point number 1, Rabbi Mesha was not wealthy, so for him to have these 7 precious stones, that's point number 1. And va'od hakayav simana. On top of that, the mafkid gave the simanim, meaning he told us that it was 7. He told us that it was in a bag. And the Gemara doesn't go over exactly which simanim he went over, but in other words, there were clear details that he knew regarding that bag. So what am I going to say? You take these 2 points, you put them together. It leads us to the conclusion that this was a pikadon. He was not the owner of these 7 stones, and therefore you can in fact return it back to its claimed owner. V'lo amar nelo de lo ragel dayo v'nafik lasam, aval ragel dayo v'nafik lasam, eimei neshechri nafkid v'yu mechzei chazei. However, if the person who claimed that he was the owner, if he was a frequent visitor in the house, so then that took away one of the important points that I just laid out. And that is, he gave some on him. Yeah, you know why he gave some on him? Because he was there all the time. And he saw the bag of precious stones then. So therefore, at that point in time, giving the some on him will not properly identify him as being the owner of those stones. Story number 2. There are going to be 3 stories in a row that are all going to speak to the same idea. So I'll go through it quickly. How gavadefke kase de kaspa bechasa. Person deposited a silver cup. So in the hands of chasa, shachiv chasa v'lo pocket. Again, chasa died without giving clear instructions of who they belong to. Also, kamei de Rav Nachman, amrlu yadana be bechasa del amid. So Rav Nachman says again, 2 points to take into consideration. This is called chazara. Number 1, chasa was not a wealthy man. V'od hakayiv simana. On top of that, the owner of the silver cup gave simanim. V'lo amar nela de lo ragel dayel v'nafik lasam, aval ragel dayel v'nafik lasam. Eimar inesh achrina ifkid v'yu mechzei chaza. But again, giving simanim is only going to be helpful if he's not frequently there in the house. If he's there all the time in the house, so that doesn't prove that he's the owner. Story number 3. Ha'ud ifkid matkasa. So this is an article of clothing. It's made out of meshi, fine silk. And Bei Rav Dimi Achud Rav Safra, deposited by Rav Dimi to watch. And Shachar Rav Dimi V'lo Pakid. And Rav Dimi dies. Rav Dimi does not give instructions of what to do with this fine silk. Also, coming to Rabbi Abba. So they go to Rabbi Abba. Amar Luhu Chada. Di Adana Bei Bei Rabbi Dimi Delo Amid. And Hakayav Simani. V'od Hakayav Simani. Again, the 2 points of consideration. I'm not going to bother translating. Let's see above. V'lo amar nela dolo ragel da'ayo v'nafik lahasam, ava ragel da'ayo v'nafik lahasam, eimei nishachrina ifkid v'yu mechzei chazei. And then same detail regarding if he was a frequent visitor in the house, simanim are then inconsequential. Good. Why does the Gemara give us 3 stories in a row that all make the same point? Okay, good. Yeah, it's called chazara, and it's called, it must be that this is an accepted halacha. Ha'hu da'amr luhu nachsaya l'tuvia. Okay, so one more story for today, shall we? And that is that a person goes in and testifies that my possession, this particular possession, belongs to Tuvia, meaning he gives instructions. He's dying and he's giving tzava, and as part of the tzava, he points to a particular article item. Not even that. In other words, he's giving instructions. I want my possessions to go to Tuvia. Okay, which Tuvia? Okay, popular name, right? Lots of Tuvias out there. So Shachiv, and the man dies. Asa Tuvia. And so in comes walking to the door, a man by the name of Tuvia. Okay, good. So now, what kind of ID does he need now in order to entitle him to be the collector of it? Meaning, everything we're accepting. We're accepting that the instructions were to give it to Tuvia. But he didn't give a picture of what Tuvia looked like. He didn't point to which Tuvia. He didn't use Tuvia's last name. And I say that knowing full well that back in the good old days, nobody had last names. So anyway, so Amar Rav Yochanan, Hari about Tuvia? So Rav Yochanan says, okay, allow me to paskin over here. The man that walked in, who's Tuvia? Good. Say hello to Tuvia. In other words, he's now entitled to take it all. So Amar, let's say the instructions were like this. Tuvia v'asa Rav Tuvia. I want to give it to Tuvia, and in comes in Rabbi Tuvia. Okay, so now, Tuvia Amar l'Rav Tuvia lo Amar. So interestingly enough, no good. We have not properly ID'd the individual. Why? Because if he wanted to give it to Rav Tuvia, so he would not have just simply referred to him as Tuvia, meaning covered. All right, it's just simple way of honoring our Talmid Chachamim. So you give him a title, Rabbi. So he didn't say that. So therefore, if he meant it were to go to Rav Tuvia, he would have said Rav Tuvia. The Gemara over here just says, I'll throw in one proviso, and that is that if he and Rav Tuvia happen to be really good friends, so then we can imagine that even though he said Tuvia, he meant Rav Tuvia. Asu Shnei Tuvia. So in comes walking to the door, not one but two Tuvias. Now what? So the Gemara says, Shachin and Tamu Chacham. One is a neighbor and the other one's a Tamu Chacham. So Tamu Chacham Kodem. So we assume that that what he bequeathed it to is to the Tamu Chacham. Okay, that's what we'll assume. Not his neighbor. So Karov Tamu Chacham, Tamu Chacham Kodem. What if the two Tuvias, one of them is a relative and the other one's the Tamu Chacham? He meant to give it to the Tamu Chacham. Ibailu, Shachin the Karov Mai. Okay, what if the two Tuvias that come in, one is a neighbor and the other one is a relative? Which one did he mean? So Tashmaz, the Gemara says, I know the answer. It's a Pasuk in Mishlei. So Tov Shachin, Karov Me'ach Rachok. So the good neighbor is better than your brother who lives some distance away. In other words, your neighbors are somebody who you communicate with all the time, and you simply have more connection with your neighbors than you do with distant relatives. The pasuk in Mishlei. Shneim krovim, shneim shchenim, shneim chachamim should dayane. Now everything being equal, and now what the court now has to do? So the court now has to make a decision. It's a funny way to end the daf. It's a funny way to end the psak. Shuda de dayane. So when we get to the babas, Baba Kama, Mitzia, and Basra, so we're going to hear this expression a number of times. Shuda de dayane. Right? The judges are going to have to make a decision. Meaning when everything's equal and there's really no compelling evidence one over the other, so the courts now are going to have to figure it out. Now exactly what that means, meaning that's very vague in terms of what those instructions are. As you can imagine, the Rishonim debate and deliberate exactly what that means, Shuda Dadayane. Okay. And so I'll leave it at that. Okay, this is a good place to stop. Okay, and we're moving on to a new story, and we're up to date. Oh. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf today. Hard daf to retrace and to summarize. Okay, but let's give it a try. Okay, on the debate between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva, so a major machlokus amongst the Tanayim as to whether or not when your borrower dies, so can you do a tfisa? Can you grab assets that were owed to you? You're a Baal Chov, can you grab those assets? So while the person was alive and he owed you the money and he defaulted and he's just simply not paying you back. So you could do a tfisa, right? I say that simply, but let's say it simply. You could do a tfisa. But now after he died, so Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon have a major debate. So let's start off over here in terms of a review. Rabbi Akiva says you have no stronger entitlement to grab any of the assets, both that are on site and those that are off site. Rabbi Akiva says all assets are going to go to the Yorshim, and then you're going to have to work it out with the Yorshim. And by the way, it's going to be harder, admittedly, because with the Yerushim now, in order for you to collect, you're going to have to make a Shvuah. Fine. That is Shitas Rabbi Akiva. And on that, we have, connected that, we have Rabbi Tarfon. And Rabbi Tarfon said no. That the assets that are off-site, you could do a tefisa on those assets. Good. Within the Shita of Rabbi Tarfon, what does it mean that assets are off-site? So in yesterday's daf and in today's daf, so a major debate amongst the Amoraim. What does that mean? Rav and Shmuel say that off-site means that it has to be within a Rishus HaRabim. Other Amoraim say no, it could be even be in a Simta, and that would be fine. Okay, good. So, and where do the Amoraim stand on this issue? Divided, right? Rav Yochanan is more sympathetic towards Rabbi Tarfon, and Reish Lakish and Rav Nachman are totally in line with the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Good. We saw that at the end of yesterday's daf, and we saw that again today's daf. And then in today's daf, so how many cases did we discuss in today's daf? So I didn't keep count. Okay. But we went through at least a half dozen cases in today's daf regarding various case studies of various creditors who went ahead and did a tfisa. Recognized, not recognized, where they were legally have the right to do so. Did they not have a right to do so? And then as we discussed those cases, we went to other cases as well, highlighting some of the cases that we did today. So a major discussion that we saw today was asking another person, a third party, to go ahead and collect on your behalf when the debtor owes other people as well. So the rule of Rav Yochanan, which we saw today, atofis abachov memakom shechav la'acherim lo kana. You cannot do that. You cannot collect debts on behalf of others. When other people are also in line to collect their debts. Good. Is that even when you appoint them as a shliach? The Gemara does not say. The Rishonim debate it. Tosos, right, it's on Pei Dalamid Beis. So Tosos weighs in on that really important topic. The more things to highlight from today's daf. The a woman who is holding notes for her husband. Her husband deposited by her, and the husband died. And now, post-mortem, the widow says, okay, I'm holding these against my debts. Did she have the right to hold them? And Rav Nachman ruled against her. Okay. Another big topic on Pei Hei Amud Aleph, and that is the wife of Rava. The wife of Rava, as a woman, was coming into court, and she was ready to make a shvuah. The wife of Rava says to Rava, no, she's no good. And Rava says, I have implicit trust in my wife. If she says it, I'm believing her. That was amazing. And Rav Papa noted that was amazing. And contrasted to the fact that when Rav Papa tried to discredit something, Rava wasn't so ready to listen. You're just one witness. Right? And Rav Papa noted the obvious. Yeah, I know I'm one witness, but remember, you trusted your wife. Okay. That was another big discussion in today's daf. The pre-written documents. Can the court pre-write in anticipation of an event, a shvua or whatever event? Can the courts pre-write the documents? Another major discussion in our Gemara today. The Gemara seems to favor the position that yes, you can. You can pre-write documents. Yeah. Okay. By a get, very good. Except for a get, which is subject to a machlokas as to whether or not the ksiva has to be done lishma or not lishma. Okay. And then finally, another big discussion on the Amud Beis, where three times we were told the story, there was a part of an estate, and when the father died, he said nothing about real valuable items that were as part of his estate that didn't really belong as part of his estate. Meaning, contextually, he's not a wealthy guy. And over here, he's got these precious items, and another person comes in and says, they're mine, and he gives them on him. So three times over, the Gemara says, you're going to give it to that person who made the claim. Number one, the holder was not wealthy. Number two, he's giving simanim. So when you take those two factors into consideration, so now that's going to give us strength to allow the person to go ahead and take it. Okay, good. And then last thing that we discussed today was proper identification of a person when he comes in and claims that he's the recipient. So is that good? Generally, yes, but with more details also. Okay, Adkan.